Welcome to Reality Check, my inaugural show, Reality Check, which is a weekly podcast about anything and everything having to do with education, education opportunity, education innovation. I'm Jeannie Allen. I'm the founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform, where we've been working to expand parental choices, education opportunity, innovation for nearly a quarter of a century. It's hard to believe. Reality Check is a production of National Review, and I'm so grateful to Charlie Cook and the whole gang at NR who make this and a growing number of other podcasts available. There are lots of places where you can find us, beginning with NR Online, where you can drop by anytime, or you can actually subscribe to Reality Check at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You know, we chose the name Reality Check because we found over the years that a lot of what you read or see about education is often wrong, or at least seriously misleading, as you will find out today with our amazing inaugural guest, Howard Fuller, a distinguished professor of education at Marquette University. He's also the director of the School's Institute for the Transformation of Learning, and we're going to talk a lot about the importance of understanding the reality behind American public education and how it fits or doesn't fit every student. Before we jump into that, however, let me just tell you a little bit about the subject and before I bring Howard directly in. So the first weekend of December, when the Associated Press, which is normally considered a highly objective, rigorous media institution, ran a story headlining an AP analysis that purports to show that charter schools are among the nation's most segregated. And then that in turn conflicts with the charter school, of course, goal of offering better alternatives to kids and failing traditional public schools. They attribute the charge to critics, but the three reporters leave little doubt that they disagree. I mean, there's so many problems with this AP story that I hardly know what to begin, and that's why I am so pleased to introduce someone who's a dear friend, someone who has predates the movement for educational change. In fact, Howard himself can speak directly about the pains and the experience of segregation. His pivotal book, No Struggle, No Progress, is a must-read for anyone. And when I met Howard, he was actually superintendent of the Milwaukee Public Schools in the 1990s, when the school choice movement, thanks in large part to he and others on the ground, was just getting started. Howard, thank you so much for joining me. I'm sorry it's not to talk about some amazing news story that came out about how great kids are doing for all the work we've done. But tell me a little bit about your take when you read this AP analysis that racially isolated, you know, charter schools are racially isolating kids. You must have been just flabbergasted.
You know, actually, Jeannie, I wasn't. And the reason why I wasn't is because nothing surprises me anymore. And you and I have been fighting this battle for such a long time that when articles like this appear, it doesn't flabbergast me. It doesn't really move me, to be honest with you, other than just to know how little information or good information is out there these days. And when you read an article like this, when you have to really ask yourself, why was it even written? I mean, what was the driving force to make a decision that out of all the things to write about, the thing people wanted to focus on was charter schools creating more segregation in America? So no, I wasn't flabbergasted, but it really, you know, as I read it, and I've read it a couple times, we're making a lot out of something that really has no there. I mean, right. I mean, when you read it, there's nothing there that is substantive. There's nothing there that would really inform a reader who was actually interested in being informed about the topic itself. And so I don't know how to even discuss it,
right?
Because I don't know what the purpose of it, right, of the article, you know, really is, to be honest.
And there's not really any basis for the information,
right?
And in fact, if you want to talk about a basis for information, talk about why, for example, a state like Milwaukee created, by the way, before charter schools, you went a completely, I'd say, even more comprehensive direction. You all created the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. So why did you do that? And how did you do that in the fact that we're talking about 1990?
Yeah, well, you know, you know the person who was really the driving force behind this is our friend, the late Polly Williams. But as I've always tried to explain, and you know this from our many conversations, our move to support parent choice came out of a a series of struggles that we had been having in Milwaukee, trying to address, ironically, the problem of educating low-income black children who, even after integration, that a significant number of them were still in what some people would call segregated schools. I refer to them really as schools that are serving black children located in predominantly black communities. And our issue was, and still is, that large numbers of these children simply were not being educated. And so we made a number of different efforts to try to get the district to address that problem. When the district, for a variety of reasons, either couldn't or wouldn't address the problem, we actually tried to create our own school district. And the late Derrick Bell really came to Milwaukee to help us make a constitutional argument for the creation of what we call the North Division School District. And we actually got a vote through the assembly to create this district, and then it was defeated in the Senate. Now, there's a part of me that says the reason why we got it through the Senate, through the assembly, was because they knew it was going to be defeated in the
right.
Senate. But after we were not able to get the separate school district or the new school district, then Polly, working with the community, and actually, Jeannie, most people don't know this, but Bob Peterkin and Deborah McGriff were the superintendent and deputy superintendent, respectively, in Milwaukee at that time.
That's right.
And Bob and Debbie actually supported the creation of some type of voucher program for poor children, and their only proviso was that the schools that received the children should have some type of record of serving low-income children well. And then the teachers union got involved in it and put in a lot more stuff that was unacceptable to the community. And then that led Polly to put together a separate bill.
Right.
And then there was an agreement between her and Black State Senator Gary George and some hearings that were held, like in Milwaukee, that ultimately got the bill included in the budget. And what most people don't realize is that had my former boss, who I love, Tony Earle, been the governor, we never would have had a Milwaukee parental choice program because he would have vetoed it.
Right, so had a governor at the time, Tommy Thompson.
Tommy
so you
Thompson,
had this conservative
right.
Republican working with this
correct.
Very liberal Democratic representative, Polly Williams, with a whole
yeah.
bunch of black folks in Milwaukee
right.
going, let's do this.
Yeah, it was what Polly called the unholy alliance. It was like Republicans, it was black parents, it was community activists, it was some Democrats, it was the business community.
Oh, yeah.
It was a collection of people that just, you couldn't have today, I don't think.
No, and you know what? It was nirvana.
Something done.
I'll tell
yeah.
you what, we all need a history lesson about that, too, because maybe if we all could go back in time and see and remember, and by the way, we, as you can tell the stories, it was painful to build and keep that coalition, but
yeah.
but when you put your baggage to the door and you're focused on kids first, then, as you've often told people and crusaded for, we need to focus on the one thing that we can come together on. And a lot of the other things fall in place. And I mean, you tell that story beautifully in your book, No Struggle, New Progress. So again, I just want to remind people who are listening on Reality Check that don't walk but run after you listen to this to get No Struggle, No Progress, a warrior, a warrior's life from black power to education reform. I love that.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jeannie, because I'm actually going to produce it as an audiobook, and I'm reading it myself.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm on chapter 14 now, and we expect to finish it by the end of the year.
Oh, that's great. It is such a fantastic book, and it's very personal, and it really does tell your story from Jim Crow South to how you became the leading education reform warrior. And sort of on that note, too, let's go back to, you were talking about how Polly Williams helped create the Milwaukee School Choice Plan. It's still since
right.
been expanded. Then there was a charter law. You know, one of the things that people don't realize a lot of, and it surfaced for me in the reports that just recently came out about charter schools and if they're racially isolated, is there's a quote in one of the articles, I think made the AP analysis, about how Ohio's communities are the most, charters are the most racially isolated without any reference to the law. So you and I know And this is this kind of arcane technocratic stuff that, you know, your normal John Q. Public and Jane Q. Public don't realize. You and I both know every law is different. And Ohio was one of those laws that, because of the union, they had to pass a law that restricted chartering to just the Big Eight school districts, which, for those of you who don't know, are the worst off inner city school districts, right? And right. So when you say that charter schools can only open in urban areas and they have to predominantly be focused on at-risk kids, what do you expect you're going to do? So first of all, that's a great thing to do. It's not sufficient, but it's necessary, right? And so then you're going to see kids, as Robin Lake pointed out in her piece in the 74 just recently, you're going to see students in segregated communities or largely racially isolated communities go to schools that are also largely racially isolated unless you open up district lines, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a very interesting point. I mean, because the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program law was specifically limited to Milwaukee. And the argument was that it was in Milwaukee where the problem existed, and therefore the program should be limited to Milwaukee. In the beginning, the charter school effort of independent charters, meaning charters that were independent of the school district, was initially also limited to Milwaukee.
Right.
And so, but I think the reality of it is that, Jenny, our goal was not integration. And I've said this to people all the time. I'm not opposed to integration. I'm just not going to spend my time working on it.
Right.
Because the reality of it is that in a city like Milwaukee, you don't have enough white people to talk about integration. If you look at the school district itself is about 14% white. And so if you were going to pursue integration, the only way you could really pursue it would be you'd have to create metropolitan districts, which politically is not going to happen because so many people, some of whom, you know, write these articles and talk about how wonderful integration is, but yet moved out of the city so that they wouldn't be involved in integration. And so for me, I go back to what Judge Robert Carter said, and I use this over and over again because in a book called Shades of Brown that Derek Bell edited, Judge Robert Carter, he had the responsibility, Jenny, to put the social science literature before the court in Brown versus the Board of Education. Many people who are pontificating about integration, number one, have never read the Brown decision. And if they had, they would have read footnote 11, where all of the social science literature is that served as a basis for that decision. And Judge Robert Carter had the responsibility to put that social science literature before the court. And in an article that he wrote in Derek Bell's book, he said if he had to do it all over again, number one, he would go to black educators instead of black social psychologists to determine what constitutes equal educational opportunity. But the second thing that he said was that if you were to ask him, is integration ultimately the best thing in America, he would say yes. But at the same time, he said, the reality of it is that we're going to have to try to figure out how to get poor black children in excellent education in environments that are going to be all black for the foreseeable future. And the reason why he's saying that is because it is ludicrous to put the blame for segregation of schools onto charter schools instead of talking about housing patterns, economic policy decisions, all of these decisions, Jenny, that have been made. And it's always been a hoax, frankly, to put the onus for integration of America onto schools and not deal with any of the other major public policies that would have to happen if this country was serious about integration. So I just find the whole discussion to be ludicrous, bogus, uninformed, and while all of that's going on, poor black and brown children who have for years been seeking out good schools now have them and in some places and are now being criticized for going to a good school and it's all Latino or it's all black.
Right.
It boggles the mind.
Exactly.
That what can go for being truth in America?
Well, it's so. No, it's so true, Howard. And then just take that by extension to another one. So you talk about housing patterns. Many of us talk about we have zoned students by zip code, right? And
yep.
So And people will go, what do you mean? My schools were okay. Maybe we just have to make schools better. And the people who want to make schools better, like where you are in the district, like Matt Damon, the Hollywood producer, who like mocked the idea of backpack full of cash and money following kids. That's a whole nother discussion. His kids went to private schools, even though he lived in Pacific Palisades, affluent California. Judge Sotomayor, God love her, respected. We don't know where really she comes down, but she will say that it's her South Bronx Catholic school upbringing that got her where she was. There are so many people who are in this hypocritical position. While all we're saying, all the people of Milwaukee were saying, all so many millions of people that aren't typically quoted in the AP article of saying is, fine, you like that? That's great for you. Instead of making the child sit in a school that they were zoned by zip code with no alternative, give them an option.
Yeah, and plus, you know, if there are people out there, well, two things let me say. Number one, the reason why Brown versus the Board of Education took place was not because of charter schools. It was the segregation of traditional public schools. And so when someone like Randy Weingarten says something about charter schools are second cousins of segregation, it's demagoguery at its highest level. Because what people are trying to do, again, is this whole taint or guilt by association. You mentioned charter schools and segregation. And so all of a sudden, charter schools become a horrible thing because, quote, they're segregated. Whereas it was the traditional public school system, and it continues to be the traditional public school system, that in large part remains, quote, segregated because of all of the other policies, housing, economic, et cetera, that create the conditions where these schools are going to be predominantly one-race schools. So you they get to have it both ways. They get to be the basis for segregation, actually, right, in schools. But then they get to criticize charters. And neither one should be criticized, frankly, for the lack of integration, because this country really is not interested in integration. They're interested in pursuing policies where people with resources have the ability to make the decisions that they need to make for their children.
Right.
And so I've said it over and over again that in America, choice is widespread unless you're poor.
Unless you're poor.
And a lot of the people who are talking about integration have made other decisions for their own children. And so the level of hypocrisy around all of these issues is just astounding. But going back to your initial question, but it doesn't flabbergast me or it doesn't move me, honestly, because this is what I expect. And so what I think we have to do when these things come up is that we have to respond just like you and I are doing now. But the main thing that we have to do is to keep our heads down and continue to work as hard as we can to create the best schools that we can for children and to give low-income and working-class people some power to choose that those of us with money in America would never give up.
That's right. And we have to educate lawmakers and policymakers.
Right.
And you and I both fight this daily. And it's Republicans and Democrats, by the way, folks. Yes. And oftentimes Republicans, sadly, will say, well, those schools are for other kids. Our schools are fine. And so every time a suburban policymaker says that to me, and I think there's a couple of issues here that I'd love your feedback on. I mean, first of all, every time a suburban policymaker says, well, our schools are fine, and I want to remind them that, no, even middle class and upper middle class schools have kids who are falling through the cracks, who are ill served. And by the way, in those school districts, you have kids with special needs, you have kids of color, you have kids who come from poor backgrounds, and they tend to meld in, and you don't see them. So you see those aggregated numbers that say, oh, Montgomery County public schools in Maryland are doing so great. But then you look at the few black kids in it, and they're not doing so great. And then there's the dropout kids who maybe had some issues at home. And no matter what your background or demographic is, there are problems. And so suburban legislators, who some in some states tend to be Republicans, not all, in Maryland it's all Democrats, they just say, well, you know what? It's okay. We just focus on this niche of kids in this little community. And then it comes back to we have schools and school reform that is kind of clustered in lower income and urban areas. Should we have statewide choice, Howard? Should we have kind of universal options so that these people begin to see that there are issues for kids all over? Or should we continue to focus only on low-income, middle, working class folks?
Well, you know, Jenny, I think people have to decide. I mean, for me, I get up every day to fight for low-income and working class people because the way I see the world, if you're without resources in this country, what happens to you on a day-to-day basis is not really what the body politic is concerned about. It's, even when you listen to the debate about the tax, whatever it is, tax bill, whatever people are going to call it,
yep.
And you hear people talk about the middle class. What's really interesting there, Jenny, is who is the middle class in America? And I read this very interesting article that talked about $59,000 is smack dab in the middle of the income reality in America. But that if you're going to talk about middle class, and Pew did some research on this, say in certain parts of California, $122,000 is the middle class. Mm-hmm. In a place like Birmingham, it might be $24,000. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we use all of these terms, and we assume that, A, everybody understands what you're talking about, and B, that It's common knowledge, or there is a one way to look at this.
Right.
And I'm simply saying all that to say that for me, I live in a city where there are 27,000 households that have a household income of less than $10,000.
Gosh.
In the city of Milwaukee, I think it's something like 65% of the families make less than $50,000. And so I don't doubt that a lot of kids in all kinds of different places have needs. And I support people who work for those children. But for me, it's low income and working class families, or what Howard Thurman called the children of the families of the disinherited. That those are the people that I get up every day to fight for. And to be quite frank, having a discussion about integration is a waste of time right now.
Right.
For these families. And you read the Orfield stuff and you read all that. You know, and Orfield and them have been talking about integration, God bless them, they built a career around integration. And obviously they're going to continue to do that. But for me, trying to get a quality education for poor black children in so many different communities throughout this country is something that I'm going to focus on. And integration is not going to be the pathway to making that happen.
Well, thank God you are focusing on that. And, you know, one way that you focused on that is not just being an evangelist a proactive crusader for the kids' rights. You helped found a charter school, right? So,
yes.
So you're not just out there pontificating, okay, you're a PhD, you're really smart, you've written books, it's awesome. But like so few academics out there, Howard, you actually showed up, rolled up your sleeves, got a building, helped create a school. Talk to us about how's Milwaukee Collegiate doing?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I'm having a bunch of meetings over the next several weeks because we need a new building. But because we're a single site, Jenny, we're struggling to survive because, as you know, the movement, it's just the reality, has pushed people towards networks.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been someone who believes that this movement should encompass people who just want to have one great school for their community. And so what's really interesting is that we have shown significant improvement in our academic
right.
results. And, you know, the report card just came out, the state report card. And for the first time, we moved out of the red into the yellow. Even though I've always argued that for high school, since all of this is based on, like, one test,
right,
pretty much,
right.
It's not a good way. But forget that. What we're showing is that We, for the first time, Jenny, we have a higher graduation rate than the state.
Oh, my gosh.
All races.
That's fantastic.
And we also, for the cohort from the last school year, our in college rate is higher than the state. So there's certain things that we are beginning to do much, much better with. We still have a long way to go because the absolute skill levels of our kids are low.
Absolutely. And much of that is starting way back when, which I want to come to. But let me just go back to facilities. So you have a single site. And for the listeners on this podcast with Howard Fuller, just a reminder for people, reality check that they're listening to. So, Howard, you're sitting in Milwaukee. You helped found a charter school. You get how much money, if any, from the state for a facility?
We don't get any money from the state for
Right. So that's the case in most states. And yet the school district gets to use the taxes to build a building, which kids are failing to get a great education from which they're failing to great education, if I was going to be literary correct. So you don't get any money. You're getting about 70 cents on the dollar, as I recall, for operational costs.
We get about, I think it's now 8,000 something per student, Jenny, but that has to cover everything, right? We don't have access to categorical funding or anything like that for facilities.
Right. So you're solving an inner city problem. You're solving a problem for kids who don't have any other resources. And the state, like most states, I just want to put a really fine point on this, is not funding your facility, your transportation, or the bulk of the stuff that they're funding for students who are zoned by zip code to a school that oftentimes is not supporting us. Howard, this is insane.
Yeah, I mean, so for example, just to put some numbers on it. The 2015-16 four-year graduation rates, and these are the state's numbers and not ours, for MCA, it's 96.8%. For statewide, that's all incomes, all races, is 88.2. Statewide for economically disadvantaged is 77.4. So 98% of our kids are free and reduced lunch, right? So that's our four-year graduation.
And all but 3% are graduating, and 88% the state, and 77% for similar kids.
Yeah, and for the Milwaukee public school system, it's 59.7. And for MPS economically disadvantaged, it's 56.4.
So the way I look at this is there's a 40% or so differential between your graduation rate and Milwaukee public schools, where they're getting money to serve kids, and you're out there going, I don't know if we can get a building. That stinks.
Right. And to go back to the kids, I mean, We're serving the same kids as MPS, and I'm not a person who's out here bashing MPS because I think they have a tremendously difficult job, and as a former superintendent, I want the district to be successful, right? Because if they're successful, that means that more kids are going to get a great education. But because of the way that the politics are, you're forced to compare yourself to other schools and to MPS, which is the only reason I'm even using this data.
Of course.
But the reality of it is, Jenny, that our kids, and I have to say this, they're facing not only serious academic issues, but it's all of the things that happen to them before they ever get to the school, you know, issues of medical care in their families, the household incomes, which impact resources.
Exactly.
Violence, you know, in communities. And so those of us who are out here fighting have to spend time like you and I are spending time talking about something that is ludicrous, which is the whole issue of integration, when we ought to be talking about how do we get trauma care to all of these children.
Right.
How do we make sure that they have food so that when they come to school, they don't come to school hungry? In addition to all of the things you have to do with the kids once they get into the building.
Once they get into the building. It's so critical. And you know what? Once again, Howard, you put this into perspective. I could talk forever. You could put this in perspective. Why are we talking about, this is what some federal data said. Well, the reality on the ground is these schools are helping kids, and educational options and opportunity that are already available to people with resources need to be available to everyone without resources. Howard, you are awesome for joining me. Howard Fuller, civil rights icon, friend, and amazing pioneer. Thank you so much for joining me on my inaugural show of Reality Check. Folks, you can tune in here, subscribe on iTunes, find Howard on Twitter, and we will be linking to him from edreform.com website as well. Thank you so much, Howard. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jen. You have a great day.